Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 25th, 2024. The headline on the front page is Setting Up Shop. And the photograph with the caption is Laura Enger talks about the renovations needed to create a grocery store on the square in Farmer City. Soon-to-open co-op ends long wait for grocery store. It's been at least 7 years since Farmer City had its own grocery store. Prior to that, residents could shop for groceries in town at an independent grocery or previously in chain-operated markets. The future looks brighter. Local residents are excited that they won't have to go out of town for dependable supplies of fresh produce and meat. A new grocery store, a cooperative known as the Farm to City Harvest Store, will open at 111 South Main Street. That's the word from Laura Enger, board president of the Farm to City Harvest Store. How soon that will happen has not been determined. It's been really moving to be able to talk to people in person about this and watch them, Enger said. They're very, very excited to have an ownership share and have a say in something positive in their community. Enger said every time she's out in public, she asks what else organizers need. It was around 2017 when the independent store named Farmer City Market closed near the intersection of Illinois Route 54 and Main Street. Prior to that, County Market and IGA operated stores there, Mayor Scott Testery said. At one time, the town also had an Eisner's Grocery on Richardson Street. Board members have been selling $100 shares with a $500 option to come in the co-op that will own and operate the store. Owning shares will mean potential discounts or patronage dividends. That doesn't mean a person has to own shares to be a customer. Everyone will be able to shop at the store. Even so, the co-op members will have a direct influence on the types of products the store carries. Typically, co-ops stock local, natural, organic, and bulk foods and offer natural hygiene and home products such as soap and shampoo. It's not like a Sam's or Costco, Enger said, which is one of the biggest misconceptions of the co-op structure. Entity. Board members have been on hand at the Blue Ridge FFA-hosted farmers markets held the last two Thursdays at the City Square to sell store shares. They will be selling Sweet Maze ice cream as a fundraiser at this Thursday's farmers markets. The board will hold a raffle which closes July 31st that is open to all members of the co-op to win a tabletop Blackstone grill. Donations to the co-op are also being accepted. Enger said former residents have sent donations even though they live out of state because they want to help their native community. The donations have gone towards such costs as attorney fees to handle a complicated process of establishing a cooperative. This is very specialized. A lot of attorneys don't like to deal with co-ops, Enger said. It took a year to get the articles of incorporation and the bylaws. The board is waiting on word from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity on how much grant money it will receive to develop the store. The new store's grant would cover much of the capital and non-capital costs to make the building grocery ready, to buy equipment and inventory. That, coupled with potential Farmer City tax increment financing district funds, plus ownership shares money, will be used to develop the store. Technically, Farmer City is not a food desert, but there is a food insecure area, Enger said. The Farmer City Harvest Store will be much like any other grocery store. Enger said many people mistakenly believe it will be a year-round farmer's market. It has evolved into a much more legitimate grocery store setup, she said. We will rely heavily on fresh meat. We're already working with a food distributor to stock plentiful amounts of food and bring in local items as well. Enger said about 20 vendors have shown interest in supplying food to the store, providing products ranging from lettuce to other vegetables, chicken, and beef. We're really excited about that, all these local vendors, Enger said. The store will be located in a 2,400 square foot building, the former Penthman building on the southeast corner of the town square. It is expected to employ a general manager and 3 to 4 employees. The store's website is thefarmertocity.com. 2023 murder trial. Footage, phones, central to case versus suspect. A jury sat quietly in the Champaign County Courthouse on Wednesday as they watched a video recorded by a doorbell camera on the night of January 5, 2023, showing two individuals walking slowly down the street in the 1200 block of Garden Hills Drive in Champaign. The footage was dark and grainy, but bursts of white light registered clearly on the screen after one of the two individuals walked slightly ahead, turned, and fired a gun at the other. Shortly after the targeted person fell to the ground, more white flashes came as he appeared to fire retaliatory shots. Champaign police officers soon found Jalen A. Williams, 21, there unresponsive in the road with 10 gunshot wounds to his body around 5:30 p.m. that night. He was transferred to an area hospital and pronounced dead. Prosecutors played that video before eventually resting their case on the second day of their trial against Zaire M. Herman, 21, of Champaign, who stands charged with first-degree murder of Mr. Williams' death. The jury trial is taking place before Champaign County Judge Roger Weber. The state called the main Champaign police detective assigned to investigate Mr. Williams' death to the stand Wednesday. He testified that police recovered two cell phones from the scene of the fatal shooting. The phones, which were examined by a forensic analyst, both had the same PIN code and social media logged in under an account by the name BD Smooth and were tied to Mr. Williams, the detective testified. Data extracted from the devices showed that Mr. Williams communicated with another social media account under the name Ludwick back and forth the day leading up to the shooting. Police tied the Ludwick account to Herman because its profile included the defendant's birthday and an email that contained his middle name, the detective said. The Ludwick user messaged Mr. Williams that he was at a liquor store on January 5th, one in walking distance to where the shooting happened. A surveillance camera outside that business appeared to capture a person matching Herman's description around 4:44 p.m. that day. A forensic pathologist testified Wednesday that his autopsy of Mr. Williams recorded 10 different gunshot wounds, with two shots through the heart and lungs being the cause of death. The detective testified that on January 11th, he responded to the OSF Heart of Mary Hospital, where Herman had appeared with a round gunshot wound in his right hand and a graze wound to his left. Body camera footage showed that Herman repeatedly answered the detective's questions about how and where he received the wounds, with "I got shot right here, I grazed right here." A search warrant conducted on an address that day tied to Herman located several splotches of blood. During the recording, the detective mentions that Herman was on parole at the time. Outside the presence of the jury, Herman's defense attorney, Jeffrey Sisko, motioned for a mistrial. He argued that the detail unduly prejudiced the jurors and was supposed to be edited out. Judge Weber acknowledged that the state had stated they had not intended to include the detail about Herman's criminal history in their case, but denied the motion for a mistrial on grounds that it was a passing comment unlikely to infect the jurors' deliberations. In the hospital video, a brown jacket is visible near Herman. Sisko presented a video before the detective that showed his client wearing the same brown jacket in a bank earlier in the day of the shooting, while the suspect outside the liquor store wore a black and white jacket. Cross-examined by Sisko, the detective acknowledged that the murderer would likely not have had reason to know that they were being recorded during the fatal shooting, so there would not have been reason for Herman to have changed his clothes before allegedly killing Mr. Williams. The detective also testified that he chose not to test Mr. Williams' phones for DNA evidence, as the police department forensic analyst would have already contaminated the devices by handling them. Further, the detective testified that he developed another suspect who had exchanged heated messages with Mr. Williams before the shooting, but he apparently cleared the suspect after interviewing the man. Though a nurse testified Tuesday that Herman told her he was shot in the Garden Hills area of Champaign, the detective acknowledged that Garden Hills can refer to the greater neighborhood beyond Garden Hills Drive, and it is not unusual for the area to have shootings. The detective said he had no other record of shootings reported in Champaign on January 5th that year, and while he did not develop a specific motive for Herman to allegedly shoot Herman, it is not unusual for murders to be carried out without a clear motive. An Illinois State Police forensic scientist testified that DNA from blood found near a doorknob at the residence on January 11th strongly tied Herman as the main contributor. Cross-examined by Sisko, the scientist testified she tested two samples of evidence at the scene of the shooting, but they either did not match to Herman or did not contain enough DNA to be compared to Herman as a contributor. Sisko is sent to present evidence, and the attorneys are expected to present closing arguments today before handing the case over to the jury. Southview Upper Elementary School. Drowning victim remembered as school's Mr. Popular. A Southview Upper Elementary School teacher remembered 12-year-old Christopher D. London as everybody's friend. Funeral arrangements are pending at Leakin Sons Funeral Home in Danville for Mr. London, whose body was found Friday in the Vermilion River, 5 days after he went missing while swimming with friends. Special education teacher Lindsay Lebo taught Mr. London when he moved to this area for 5th and 6th grade, living with his father after his mother passed away. He would have been a North Ridge Middle School student starting in August. He was Mr. Popular, LeBeau said. He was everybody's friend, helping out in class. He never wanted to miss school. He said he prided himself on having perfect attendance and was also an excellent student, being nominated for a citizenship award. He was a great kid. Leakin Sons is accepting donations for Mr. London's funeral expenses. There will be a memorial service. Funeral Director Roy Cummings II said those wishing to donate can call 217-442-2667 or send a check with Mr. London's name in the memo line to 304 East William Street, Danville, 61832. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Pre-registration numbers are lower than usual, but organizers for Friday's Savannah Day 2.96 Memorial Run in Sydney are hoping for a big walk-up crowd. Savannah, an academically and athletically gifted 2018 Unity High School grad, was killed in a car crash in October 2018. She was 18. Every summer since, her family, Mom Gloria and sisters Sydney and Summer, have hosted the fundraiser to kick off Sydney Fun Days. Proceeds support a scholarship presented annually to a senior girls student athlete at Unity. Bree Ritchie was this year's recipient. On-site registration starts at 5:30 p.m. Friday near the fire station on David Street. Parking for the race will be at the grain elevators. Tonight, the family will spray paint Purple Hearts along the route in Sydney. "We would like to keep it going," Sydney Day said, "because we want to keep my sister's memory alive." Can't make it but would like to contribute? Email savannahday2.96@gmail.com. Passing the torch. "I revere this office," Biden says in a speech explaining his exit from presidential race, "but I love my country more." President Joe Biden on Wednesday delivered a solemn call to voters to defend the country's democracy as he laid out in an Oval Office address his decision to drop his bid for re-election and throw his support behind Vice President Kamala Harris. Insisting that the defense of democracy is more important than any title, Biden used his first public address since his announcement Sunday that he was stepping aside to deliver an implicit repudiation of former President Donald Trump. He did not directly call out Trump, whom he has called an existential threat to democracy. The 10-minute address also gave Biden a chance to try to shape how history will remember his one and only term in office. Nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy," Biden said in a somber coda to his 50 years spent in public office, and that includes personal ambition. It was a moment for the history books, a U.S. president reflecting before the nation on why he was taking the rare step of voluntarily handing off power. It hasn't been done since 1968, when Lyndon Johnson announced he would not seek re-election in the heat of the Vietnam War. "I revere this office," Biden said, "but I love my country more." Trump, just an hour earlier at a campaign rally, revived his baseless claims of voter fraud in the 2020 election, which he lost to Biden. His refusal to concede inspired the Capitol insurrection of January 6, 2021, which Biden called the worst attack on democracy since the Civil War. Biden skirted the political reality that brought him to that point, his abysmal performance in a debate against Trump nearly a month ago, where he spoke haltingly, appeared ashen, and failed to rebut his predecessor's attacks, sparking a crisis of confidence from Democrats. Lawmakers and ordinary voters questioned not just whether he was capable of beating Trump in November, but also whether, at 81, he was still fit for the high pressure job. Biden, who said he believed his record was deserving of another term in office, tried to outlast the skepticism and quell the concerns with interviews and tepid rallies. But the pressure to end his campaign only mounted from the party's political elites and from ordinary voters. "I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation," Biden said, saying he wanted to make room for fresh voices, yes, younger voices. He added that this is the best way to unite our nation. It was a belated fulfillment of his 2020 pledge to be a bridge to a new generation of leaders and bow to the drumbeat of calls from within his party to step aside. Biden's address was carried live by the major broadcast and cable news networks. He spooled out a weighty to-do list for his last 6 months in office, pledging to remain focused on being president until his term expires at noon on January 20, 2025. He said he would work to end the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, fight to boost government support to cure cancer, address climate change, and push for Supreme Court reform. The president sought to use the address to outline the stakes in the election, which both Biden and Harris have framed as a choice between freedom and chaos. But he tried to steer clear of overt campaigning from his official office. "The great thing about America is here. Kings and dictators do not rule," Biden said. "The people do. History is in your hands. The power is in your hands. The idea of America lies in your hands." Biden was also making the case for his legacy of sweeping domestic legislation and the renewal of alliances abroad. But the way history will remember his time in office and his historic decision to step aside is intertwined with Harris's electoral result in November, particularly as the vice president runs tightly on the achievements of the Biden administration. His advisors say he intends to hold campaign events and fundraisers benefiting Harris, whom Biden praised as tough and capable, albeit at a far slower pace than if he had remained on the ballot himself. Harris advisors will ultimately have to decide how to deploy the president, whose popularity sagged as voters in both parties questioned his fitness for office. Biden, aides say, knows that if Harris loses, he'll be criticized for staying in the race too long and not giving her or another Democrat time to effectively mount a campaign against Trump. If she wins, she'll ensure his policy victories are secured and expanded, and he'll be remembered for a Washingtonian decision to step aside for the next generation of leadership. Biden said he's grateful to have served as president. "Nowhere else would a kid with a stutter grow up to sit in the Oval Office. I've given my heart and my soul to our nation," he said. "I've been blessed a million times in return." Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Wednesday that any questions of Biden resigning his office before the election, which would allow Harris to run as an incumbent, was ridiculous. Jean-Pierre said Biden has no regrets about his decision to stay in the race as long as he did, or his decision to quit it over the weekend. He said Biden's decision had nothing to do with his health. Trump, who watched Biden's remark from his private jet, posted on his social media platform that the president was barely understandable and so bad. As he spoke inside the Oval Office, Biden was joined off-camera by family members, including his wife Jill, son Hunter, daughter Ashley, and several grandchildren. Hundreds of administration aides held a watch party in the White House and gathered in the Rose Garden afterward to hear Biden thank them for their service. Outside the gate, supporters of Biden gathered holding signs that read, "We love Joe," and a brass band played. Harris, "I am fighting for our nation's future." Vice President Kamala Harris told members of the historically black sorority Zeta Phi Beta on Wednesday that "we are not playing around," and asked for their help in electing her president in November. "In this moment, I believe we face a choice between two different visions of our nation, one focused on the future, the other focused on the past," she said in a speech 3 days after launching her bid for the White House. "And with your support, I am fighting for our nation's futures." Voters in Indiana haven't backed a Democratic presidential candidate in nearly 16 years. But Harris, a woman of Black and South Asian descent, was speaking to a group already excited by her historic status as the likely Democratic nominee and one that her campaign hopes can expand its coalition. On Wednesday, she thanked the room full of women for their work, electing her vice president and Joe Biden president. "And now, in this moment, our nation needs your leadership once again," she said. In a memo released Wednesday, campaign chair Jen O'Malley Dillon pointed to support among female, non-white, and younger voters as critical to success. "Where President Harris goes, grassroots enthusiasm follows," O'Malley Dillon wrote. "This campaign will be close, it will be hard fought, but Vice President Harris is in a position of strength, and she's going to win." Still, Democrats face challenges as the country is nursing frustrations over higher prices following a spike in inflation. While Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, survived a recent assassination attempt that further energize his already loyal base. The memo was more optimistic than the narrow path the campaign saw after the 81-year-old Biden delivered a disastrous debate performance in June. He quit the race on Sunday. During her speech, Harris referred to Biden as a leader with a bold vision. "We are deeply, deeply grateful for his service to our nation," she said, before turning to contrast the administration's agenda with that of Trump's. "These extremists want to take us back, but we are not going back," she said. "All across our nation, we are witnessing a full-on assault on hard-fought, hard-won freedoms and rights." Trump tests attacks on Harris at North Carolina rally. Donald Trump unleashed a barrage of attack lines Wednesday against his likely new opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris, whom he called his new victim of defeat, and accused of deceiving the public about President Joe Biden's ability to run for a second term. The rally in Charlotte, North Carolina, marked his first public campaign event since Biden dropped out of the 2024 matchup and Harris became the Democrats' likely nominee. The rally concluded minutes before Biden addressed the nation to explain he dropped his reelection bid to pass the torch to Harris, who is 22 years younger than him. "So now we have a new victim to defeat, Lion Kamala Harris," Trump said, labeling her the most incompetent and far-left vice president in American history. Trump called her a radical left lunatic and said she was crazy for her positions on abortion and on immigration. He also mispronounced her first name repeatedly, a denigrating approach to the first Black woman and person of South Asian defense to call a majority party's presidential ticket. Trump's speech signaled the last stage for the campaign, maybe especially brutal and personal, even as some GOP leaders warn Republican allies not to use overtly racist and sexist attacks against Harris. Trump has ramped up his criticism of the vice president since Biden's abrupt departure, calling Harris the same as Biden but much more radical. He blamed her for what he portrays as the Biden administration's failures, particularly security along the U.S.-Mexico border. On Wednesday, the speakers who appeared on stage before the Republican nominee attacked Harris's record on the border, highlighting she was tasked with leading a White House effort to tackle migration issues. Harris's name was met with boos several times during the speeches. "She was assigned that. She was given that task, and she failed," said Brandon Judd, former president of the National Border Patrol Council, the union that represents agents. Trump also accused Harris of being just as responsible for Biden's policy at the U.S.-Mexico border, which saw illegal crossing arrests reach record highs at the end of 2023, and repeated his pledge to conduct mass deportations with the help of local police. Aiming for a September Prairie Playdate. Earlier this year, the Urbana Park District hosted one last playdate at the original Prairie Play to help community members say goodbye to the Meadowbrook Park Playground after nearly 30 years. It's expected that come fall, the public will likely be invited to a similar event to welcome the new Prairie Play Playground, said the project manager, Andy Russo. "The space is going to be pretty unique, which I think makes that a special place," he said. "And that's what we were trying to do as part of our goal, replacing the previous Prairie Play." It was a unique playground in our community, and that's what we're trying to do with this one. He estimated the playground will likely be complete in late summer or early fall, probably in September. However, he noted that the district does not have a firm date at this time. Park District Executive Director Tim Bartlett said in a previous interview that about $1.6 million has been invested in the project. Russo said some of the work going on at the site includes paving, painting, and flooring work inside the pavilion, playground surfacing, and landscaping. Later on, the district will need to close the park's parking lot briefly for milling and resurfacing, he added. It will provide notice once the dates have been set for this work. When asked if there have been many delays, he said, not really. No, not much to speak of, really. Weather's been fairly good, he said. We got some really hot days that kind of slowed some things down, and some bouts of rain, but nothing I would pick out and say was really bad. We're pretty much on schedule. According to the park district officials, the new playground will include a dual zip line, a multi-story play tower, a non-verbal accessibility sign, musical play equipment, vine tunnels, areas that offer developmental play for different age groups, a poured-in-place surface, a natural discovery path, bike racks, and a repair station. Most people that I've talked to have been very excited about the zipline, Russo said, and that's probably because it was a pretty big hit at Blair Park when we just did that playground a couple of years ago. Teacher of the Week, Les Kootz, Art, Dr. Williams Elementary, Urbana. Taking art to new places. In Les Kootz's first year at Dr. Williams Elementary, the University of Illinois graduate changed the way it was taught at the Urbana school. Kootz allowed students to sign up for activities that included crocheting, sewing, and sign making, and collaborated with teachers during social-emotional planning sessions. This year, Kootz was given a Shining Star Award by the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation. I find my work important because everyone deserves to have the freedom to create in their life. But beyond that, I feel that everyone deserves the freedom to be themselves. My goal is always to encourage students to express themselves fully and without question from others. It is so important that students have adults in their lives that encourage them to be who they are. I became a teacher because I love sharing art with people. I have always had a teaching spirit, but I never thought of myself as a teacher because school was not always a positive place for me as a queer and neurodivergent person. I feel very lucky to have landed where I did at Dr. Williams and that I am able to share my love of artistic exploration with the most wonderful students. My favorite thing to teach students is sewing. There is nothing more magical than having the ability to sew. And the most magical part is that anyone can sew, and once you know how, you can only grow. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when something clicks for a student. It is so exciting to see the shift in confidence for someone who finally reaches their goal after persisting, growing, and shifting from mistakes along the way. To witness a student self-empower to share lifelong skills, to witness these lessons being carried into the future, these are moments which fill my heart with joy. I keep students engaged by allowing them the power to choose their own artistic path. I think it is so important to offer students a place to take risks, to challenge themselves, and to try things they might have thought they couldn't do. Something else I'm passionate about, puzzles, Sudoku, word puzzles, brain teasers, the great mysteries of life. I love a good riddle. The world is a mystery. My favorite in teacher and subject to study were, I had several very special teachers in my life. My third grade teacher, Mrs. Palmer at Lincoln Elementary. My high school English teachers, Mrs. Bally and Mrs. Driver at Dixon High School. My middle school English teacher, Mrs. DeHoldo. An honorable mention, Mr. Rinkes, who is never officially my teacher, but let me eat lunch in her room at least once a week at Reagan Middle School. School was not easy for me, but these teachers definitely made a difference in my life in our short times together. My favorite subjects were art and writing. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette, Part 1, for Thursday, July 25th, 2024. Please stay tuned for Part 2.